Yeah.
Was there talk of resistance in the factory or the camp that you worked in? Did anybody talk about resistance or escaping?
We talked, and we did, because they said, in Starachowice, said that we go into Auschwitz, and Auschwitz is elimination, I mean, ovens. So we took that chance, and the minute we started out, a lot of got, that night was a massacre. A lot of from our people got shot by the gate, because the posts, you know, they stay on the watchtowers. They always, with reflectors, you know, all around the gates. And the minute they saw by the gates, we got already organized that we shouldn't go in groups, but singles, you know, whatever. And we gonna cut that wire, and the minute the wire is cut, we go through in the forest, and we get together with the underground, with the Polish underground. Didn't work. They spotted us, they started to shoot, you know, and everybody who was still alive ran back, you know, in the barracks. And the next morning, the same night, what they shot, a lot of them, in the same night they were calling for more guards, and they surrounded the whole camp, and the next day trucks came. They didn't want to take no more chances, you know. And they took us and straight to Auschwitz.
Hey, you said they had told you about ovens at Auschwitz. Who had told you about this?
In the factory, the Polish people, they said Auschwitz is built crematoriums. Nobody who goes to Auschwitz, this is it. So you can imagine the fear, you know. We came to Auschwitz. The first we came is to Buna. This is a small part of Auschwitz. We didn't know, you know, I know now, we didn't know that time what happened, why they took us to Buna. Buna was to a sortation place. They took trades, you know, plumbers, electricians, shoemakers, painters, one side, who doesn't have a trade, in the other side. So most of them, they were right away sent to the ovens, who didn't have a trade. Right away. And who was a tradesman, they sent us straight to Auschwitz.
Was this in Monowitz?
Monowitz, yeah. In Monowitz was the IG IG farm, the IG craft. They were making paint, they were making gasoline there, all kind of chemicals. And, you know, each paint is like, you know, I worked there, whatever iron has to be painted, all kind of colors, gray or red. This was my department, you know. And this was daily routine, back and forth you go, you know, and still they started in 1944, they started to bomb day and night those factories, the IG farm, the Kraftwerk they called it. We were standing, and since then, no more painting. They gave us a cleanup commander, Aufraum commando, they called it, you know. But we saw a sign already. In 1944, we saw a sign, something is happening already, you know. After all, we didn't see nothing, like the whole world would not exist. Just the Germans. But in 1944, we saw planes. We didn't know what kind of planes, but we saw planes bombing, so we knew this is not German planes. In that time, all the Polish people in the factory said, now it's going to be the end. Because they were bombing cities, the railroads, English planes, Russian planes, and American planes. On three shifts, they were coming and going, but still it took more than a year to be liberated. They were bombing day and night.
Were you ever in Auschwitz I? In the other camp? The other Auschwitz camp?
The main?
Yeah.
The main Auschwitz, yeah.
Were you living in the barracks in Monowitz?
Yeah.
What about Birkenau? Did you ever get to go to...
No. In Birkenau, we were standing maybe a few days. And from Birkenau, they sent us to Monowitz.
To Monowitz, I see.
So, this wasn't a working camp there. I told you, this was just a transport came to Buna, and they picked what they need and sent to Monowitz, Auschwitz.
Could I just step back for a
minute? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, tell me about the transport. You said they took you by train in a cattle car. How many
From Starachowice.
How many were you in
this
the
was the camp was about 15,000 people.
And how many per car?
The car got in about more than 100 people. And when we came to Buna, and the transport came in, more than half from the 15,000, more than half was dead in the cattle cars. Because it was hot.
How long were you in the cattle
car? I was in the cattle car about... It didn't took long. A night and a day. The next day, in the afternoon, I was already in Buna.
What did you do for sanitary facilities?
Not on top.
On top of each other.
It was a little window. And who was stronger? Try, you know, it was like sardines. It wasn't July. The heat was unbelievable. We were just burned up, you know, for thirst. And who didn't have any strength fell down. This is like a jungle. The other stepped on it that he could reach because the window was high. It was just a little window in that cattle car. And who was short couldn't reach it. But half of the people, some whole wagon, cattle came, and they only opened the doors and unloaded dead people. I've never seen in my whole life something like it, you know, how in a day and a half what could happen to people in that heat, in no air, in no water, in no facilities, like flies. One stepped on each other. Just a miracle. I don't know how I survived. I wasn't that, you know, big of a man. It's just pure luck. I don't know.
When the doors opened at Auschwitz, what was the first thought
the first
you had? What did you see first? What did you hear? Smell?
Nothing. The first when the train came in, it looked to me like a forest. And it looked, because the train, the track was going through, and in both sides was trees. And we were unloaded in that little area, but further, they started to chase us, then we came in already to that gate. In the Auschwitz, Arbeit macht frei. It was a big sign. It was the big iron gates, Arbeit macht frei. So we still didn't know, you know, if that's true, if they got real ovens, you know. Now we are in Auschwitz. When they chased us in those barracks, first they told us we're gonna take, we're going Badanstalt, taking a bed. And this I heard already, that if they tell you you're gonna take a bed, you'll never come out from there. But it wasn't in our case. We got in, they gave us a piece of soap, we got in, we took a bath, and we left all our, we had civilian clothes in those camps, in the Starachovice. And over there, we went out the other door, and we had already the striped, a jacket and a pair of pants, and that's it.
Were you shaved too?
Right away, we took that bath, you know, it was barbers, right away shaved off complete the hair.
Prisoners, barbers?
Yeah. And after that, they took us to the barracks, and in the barracks was already, inside, was like a Blockelste. He was the leader of that barrack.
Also
each
prisoner.
Barrack, he was a German, but those were the worst. This was all, it wasn't regular Germans, this was Germans, what Hitler got them locked up, homosexuals, murderers. They got those positions to overseers, you know, on us. All those Blockelstes, you know, they call them. They got all the authority. They could kill a person and throw him away, and without any explanation to the Germans. They had all the authority. The only time when we marched out, then we had the SS guarding us with machine guns every morning.
Was there Appell in the morning?
Appellplatz, we got up, you know, in the morning about 5:30, 6 o'clock, who knows, we didn't have no watches, but it was in winter time, still dark. Dark outside, and we stood outside till got a little bit light. First they gave us in the morning a ersatz coffee. In a schale, that means in a little dish, you know, that's all we had. And a piece of bread, very thin, in the morning. And this till 12 o'clock. And 12 o'clock we had a soup, Buna soup they called it. And when we came back to the camp, we had another soup. This was the daily food.
People starving to death there?
Every day you could see walking around in the camps, swollen. Most were, they were swollen, I don't know what, and after the swelling, they were not the same person. See, I was with my age of boys, you know, and the minute they started to swell up, day to day, they looked like different people. The feet was, you know, and plus this, they made selection. Every Sunday, we had to get undressed in the barracks. And who was like, I'm just explaining to you about that, you know, the swelling, who was swollen, they took away. Each had a card, you know, the number, this number, like a file, you know. So when they came in, you had a card with this number in your hand. When the assessment, the doctor, took away the card from you, that means you go on a separate barrack and to the oven. This was every Sunday. Because how could you look good on that food? I mean, if you don't eat, you get run down. See, everybody looked at each other, how? Because the ribs, if it show real, you know, if the ribs show real, true, he didn't have a chance. They called you out, we were standing naked in the barracks, Sunday morning, every Sunday. So you can imagine just the fear that when the Sunday came, you knew this could be it, right? Because everybody looked at each other, how do I look, you know? But just, it was a miracle. But who was real, run down and, you know, swollen, right away they took that registration card, and he wasn't anymore on that on that barrack anymore. And this was going on every Sunday, and every week was missing people. And they kept bringing from other cities, from other countries, you know, from France, from Belgium, from Holland, from all over. Every day was transport pouring in.
Did you talk to the new prisoners?
Yeah.
Did you tell them what was going on in the camp?
Sure. No.
What was the
atmosphere
in the camp, in the barracks?
The atmosphere, see, if a person is hungry, you lose conversation. What are you going to talk about? Your mind, your stomach grinds day and night. You're hungry. You think about the family. You know, you complete. You're not a person. You're an animal. You run to the kitchen. How many times I was by the garbage, and I took out the kitchen from the kitchen. They throw out those bones from horses. Most was horses. They killed horses or sick horses, whatever, they got a horse, and they brought them to the camp to cook that soup with that horse meat. And a lot of times was no meat at all. It was just cooked from leaves, whatever they could get, and the peel. I never ate a potato, a whole potato. It was always the peel from the potato they cooked in the camps, and the potatoes, the Germans, you know, went for the Germans. So actually the morale was so low that nobody had on his mind to do a joke or to talk about anything, you know. If you're constant hungry, you always look, you know, how to organize an extra soup, an extra piece of bread. I risked my life.
By organize, you mean?
Organize, that means
steal.
Yeah. That this was the word,
yeah, okay,
in the camp organization. That means stealing. And I risked my life because I worked in the factory in the EG farm. I worked with paint. Let's put it that way. And in the barracks was wooden bunk beds, three wooden bunk beds, and they're made from boards, and they were painted. But during the years, you know, when you step on them, you go up and down, they get this. And it depends who takes care of that barrack. That particular, when I was there, that guy, he had a green point, that means he killed somebody. But still, he liked clean.
Blackout? Is this the blackout?
The blackouts, yeah. So he told me, he says, he saw me every day, I mean, he knew everybody by the name. He says, if you can bring home paint, I'll leave you in the barrack, and you stay. They can do everything. You stay and paint every bunk bed, but you got to bring first a lot of paint, and then I'll release you. I'll go out on the Appellplatz, and I'll talk to that Sturmführer, you know, and he'll leave you for 2 weeks. Or a week, you know, how long it's gonna take you. You're gonna stay here and work, and I'll give you food. You're not gonna be hungry. This is already a paradise, right? Now, how to get the paint? Because when you walk out, we were going in fives, and they were counting, you know. Let's see if it marched out. My group was 280 painters in the morning. 280, a commando, Marle commando, that means painting commando. And 280 has to come back. And not to come back with bags, just march in with anything. Now, but I started one day, I poured in a gallon of paint. But you know, they didn't count how many paint I should use. They brought me in the morning, let's see, 10 gallons. They put it 10 gallons. They know I'm not going to drink it. And I used maybe 4 or 5 gallons, you know, so I still had a few gallons left. But one day I says, I'm going to take a chance. I'll take 1 gallon. Whatever it's going to happen, it's going to happen. I says, I'm hungry anyway. I got to take that chance. And I marched in, and you know, your heart, you know you're not supposed to bring in nothing. And I'm holding that gallon. And the minute I, you know, got through that, already that gate inside, you already lose, you know. You can run, you can do anything. That's all. So I went to the barracks and I talked to the block and I says, that's the first gallon. He says, okay, try every day a gallon, he says. In 2 weeks, you're going to have more than 10 gallons of paint. In the minute we got 10 gallons of paint, and that's what I did. Every day I brought home a gallon. And then he left me there. He went out to the store in the morning and he says, I need him. He's going to paint, you know, the barracks. Well, he cares, you know. So instead of 280, he went out to 79. And I were at least 2 weeks, I was not hungry because they went in the kitchens, they got extra bread. If somebody died, listen, if we were in the barracks, let's see, 280 people, every week was missing people. Every week was missing. But he still collect in the kitchen for the 280. Sometimes he had already in the barracks 250. Still 280 bread, but he didn't give us. He had his already organization, what to do with it. He changed it for whiskey, for other things, you know. But that's what, everything for bread. Everything, bread was like gold. A lot of times I had, you know, 2 weeks, every 2 weeks we got a shirt. We were lucky, it was a clean shirt, but there was patches. But if he knew you, that locals there, he gave you a better shirt because he knew what you're doing with that shirt. See, if I got a good shirt, no patches, a decent shirt, even washed, but in good shape yet, in the factory was Germans, civilians, and they didn't have, in the war, you know, shirts and stuff like that. They brought me an old shirt because I have to give back the next couple of weeks, you know, but you have to give back a shirt. It doesn't matter. Tort or patched, you have to give back that another shirt, and you get another shirt. So for that good shirt, he brought me an old schmatter and a bread, a loaf of bread. For that shirt, I went in it was the outside when we worked. It was like a jam, you know what you go, art house they call it. I went in there, and this you got to be careful because the SS were watching, you know, but in the bathroom they let you go. You had to run in and take off that shirt, you know, and you can imagine, and put out and take the new shirt and hide it underneath and go out, you know, and talk to that German and give you the bread. Now, when you got the bread, where are you going to put it? You work, he's watching, you know, so you got to be in that jam and break the bread of pieces in the packets, you know, put it in whatever you can. You can't carry a loaf of bread because you would be punished because, see, they would force you, who gave you this bread, you know? In that time, just for exchanging, you could be shot. This was the law. No, with nobody, no civilians, no deals and no nothing. Nobody should help you. You work, go to the camp and go back to work, but no interfering with civilians whatsoever. And this was we were there till they started to bomb, and then it was no good. From then on, they were bombing. See, all the barracks, all in the kitchen from the camp was built. The kitchen was going on steam, heat, steam, cooking, everything. But when they bombed the camps, they knocked out the pipes, you know, it was cold, no food whatsoever. But at least, you know, we thought maybe, so whatever is going to happen, if they bomb, I wish they bomb every second, so it's going to be an end, you know, to the war. Never. We still, he had a chance to evacuate in 1944, in January. That camp Auschwitz was complete evacuated.
45.
In 1945. No, in 40. January 44. January
40.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
In 44, I still was liberated in April. 45. Oh, you're right. January we were evacuated in 1945, and I was liberated in the 24th of April in 1945.
Where were
so
you?
So that means from Auschwitz to Oranienburg.
How did you get there?
By everything, by trains.
By train again.
This was another Holocaust. Because it was winter time, we were not dressed. Just in that striped jacket, they took us on train, on open cattle trains. And that time, they were beating and hitting, and we got on that, was complete open. And I remember like now, and we were traveling about 2 days. Open cattle, it was snowing, and we were just, from that snow, we licked, you know, because here everything started to dry out again. But was winter time, we could hold it out better than, you know, summertime, you fell. In the winter time, when it's packed, it keeps you warm. And we came to Oranienburg, and from Oranienburg, we worked there in a factory again. And this was 12 days in April, the 12th of April, we started to march. We left at Oranienburg camp and we marched through forests during the day, and at night we slept in the forest. But in daytime we kept going and going and going. We supposed to go to a certain destination. It was already, everything was prepared. When they caught that Sturmbannführer with that map, he had all the papers where he's going to take us, and over there we all supposed to was prepared graves. We saw it after we were liberated. We saw dogged up graves, and we supposed to go to those graves, and we supposed to get shot and dump everybody. No witnesses supposed to be alive, because they felt the pressure already that they're losing the war. So they started to eliminate everybody. And just happened, if it's meant to live, 2 days, if it would take, we could reach that destination. But 2 days before we reached it, they had to run away. They had an order. We didn't know. But the Germans, they told us, all of a sudden that we were marching, we hear a whistle, you know. And everybody from the guards started to go forwards. And we are marching, we didn't know what happened. We knew that they called them, you know, the SS. But we don't know what happened. All of a sudden, one SS comes back. He says in German that we're going to eat now. And everybody sit down in that forest. And if anybody stands up and runs away, the whole group is going to be killed. So we sat down by the trees, and all of a sudden we don't see nobody. We didn't have a watch, but accordingly, we see it's getting already dark. Nobody comes back. All of a sudden, we see Germans coming towards us with no belts, no hats, everything off. And they said, what are you sitting here? He says, you go to the villages, to the farmers, they'll give you food and clothes and everything. You are already free.
This was Wehrmacht?
Wehrmacht. The SS was still running around in the villages. Whoever reached a home, they took him out. Even a friend of mine, he lives in New York, he got shot. 50 people they took out from that village outside in a field and shot him. See, that friend of mine, he was shot in the arm, and they saw he's, laying on top of all the deads and bleeding, and he didn't say nothing, so they left. And when they left, he started to yawn and yell and scream, and a farmer came and picked him up. And he took him about 6 kilometers from that little village to a hospital. When he took him to the hospital, it was too late, a gangrene, and they took off his whole arm. But still he was lucky. He's alive today with one arm. He was between those 50s. Now, when we started to walk, we saw the first farmhouse. We knocked on the on that window, and we didn't hear no response. We knocked again. A woman came, put away the curtains, looks out. We were not shaved. 12 days marching in April is rain, and we were complete soaked through and through. Even that little jacket, we had that striped with the pants, through and through wet. And was scared. They looked at us, was no man, woman. A few minutes later, she came to the door with a, the farmers, they bake their own bread, that big bread, big loaf, round, and a pitcher of milk. And she opened slowly the door and gave us, Says, we don't want, we can't eat. We want to go in and lay down, lay down and dry out. We're not hungry, We just want to lay down and dry out. She says, still the SS troop and running around and taking out people. She says, the only thing I can do for you, they were just here maybe 10 minutes ago. Go up go in the barn, and there's a ladder. You go up there, there's hay, and you hide underneath the hay till I'll call you down. And that's exactly what she did. We went up there, and we were underneath that hay, hiding on the end by the wall. And when we, at night, SS came in, and we hear the voice, they talk loud. And they go up on the ladder, and with bayonets, they were in the hay. Thank God, if they would go up on the hay, but they were standing on the ladder, and just to hear that they were looking if somebody didn't hide, and they went back down. And the next morning, the woman yells, we should come down. She says, there's Americane, Americans are here, tanks, you can imagine. When we came down and walk to the street, and we see the white stars on the green thing. First we didn't know what kind soldiers, till we got close. And then, every nationality, I knew that in America is all kind of nationalities, I said. Polish, I speak Polish, so I figure somebody's got to be, not I couldn't speak a word of English. That's Polish, Polish, Polish. Oh, Stan! Right away they called, you know, American boys. And they could, a little bit, a few words, I could communicate, you know. Every American Polish kid speaks a few words, you know, from the parents. It was a sergeant. He says, listen, he's just the occupation. The only thing, he says, I'll go in to that farmer and I'll tell him to give you clothes and I'll tell him what to feed you. He says, you can't. This was the Third Army, the medics. You can't eat fat, he tells me, you know. He says, otherwise you're gonna die. The only thing you could eat is toast and lean soups, no fat. The first 2 weeks, tea, little by little, till the stomach, he says, because when you start right away, the fat food, you can't survive. You can get diarrhea and die. So that's what we did. Maybe 6, 7 boys, we were there by that farmer. And he told the farmer what to do, and every day we had toast and tea and pigeons. See, pigeons, every farmer got thousands of pigeons there. Each farm's got them. So every day the woman caught a few pigeons and she cooked the pigeon for us. Pigeon soup is like water. No fat whatsoever. A pigeon is not fat. You never heard it. A pigeon is white meat, like tastes a little bit like chicken. But when you cook that in water, there's no fat, just clear soup, but no fat in it. And this we ate till we got through a half of that pigeons, you know. And we, after a month, we started to feel a little bit, you know. I weighed 87 pounds when I was liberated. 87. Yeah, I couldn't even see good. The vision, my vision was so blurry, and I was young. But from not eating, every time you get, if you're hungry, God forbid, you should know about it. If a person is hungry, it gets blurry a lot of times before your eyes, you know. You're weak and you're blurry. And day to day you get weaker and weaker, the vision gets weaker, you know. And we really recuperated there, that farm. And then I went, I says, I don't want to stay here. The farm, it's already 3 months, you know. So I told that woman, was no man. And she took me with a horse and wagon to a city.
Do you remember her name?
No.
That was a German woman.
A German woman. I says, I want to go in the city. Listen, they had to do the least. What they could do for us is keep us and feed us. That's the least what they could have done. You know what I'm talking about? Because they were forced by the United States government to food and clothes and a place where to stay. They should supply at least for the time being till everybody gets registered, wherever he wants to go, to the United States, to Canada. And I went in the city and I saw a guard outside, an American soldier. And again, I went, I said, stop here. And I went and I talked to the guy. I says, Polish again. You know, still? I says, Polish. Oh, yeah, Polish? Okay, 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 he says. He went and opened the door and he called a guy. This was a officer's casino where the officers, American officers, captains, majors, the high ranks ate. What do you call? A mess hall. And I talked to him and I says, I don't want to go back to the village. I want to work here for Americans, you know, to pay back what they did for me, you know. I want to work free. He says, okay. He ran in and all of a sudden he comes out with a Chinese American, Chinese descent. He was the chief chef in the kitchen there. And he talked to him, and the Chinese right away took me. He says, come on. Got me in. You see, what I ate yesterday, I don't remember. But those things, I remember. You know, this is laying in your mind, because this is happy things. And he gave me an American uniform, and he put up on a little cloth, Poland, here, you know, Poland, on the arm, because it was a lot of incidents. They went through a lot from Germans. They were in American uniforms, and a lot of GIs. I don't know if the United States, if the people knew about it, a lot of GIs was killed after the war. They were changing clothes, and most women, they went, you know, they took girls, and the girls took them in a forest, and they got stabbed, killed in the forest, took away the passport, took away the uniforms, and that's why a gang, the Nazi gang, started in Germany. Again, after the war, till the United States, the CIC, stepped in and started to investigate, and I think they eliminated, you know, for that time being. And I started to work for the American troops. And I worked there about a year and a half.
Now, what city were you in?
Come. This was by Furtenwald, right near the about 19 kilometers of the from the Czechoslovakian border. This is Bavaria. Right by the end, Bavaria, where Czechoslovakia meets with Bavaria, Schwarzenwald. Maybe you heard about it, like
Black
forest. You know the German words.
That's what I do.
You got Polish name too. So your parents came from Poland, or no? Or from Russia?
My grandparents are from Kiev.
Kiev.
So, which is Poland, but then was Russia when they
yeah.
came.
And then, after I got out from there, was already, you know, a lot of Jewish people in the city. Everybody was no more in villages, started a Jewish community. And
you were about, what, 25 years old now?
Yeah. Funny. I was 17. In 5 years, I was 23 years old, and I was liberated. Exactly. And then was, you know, a Jewish community. We belonged to the UNRWA. You know what UNRWA is?
Relief
United Nations Relief Organizations. Okay.